Welcome to the Untangling Web3 podcast. With the rapid rise of Gen AI, how can you be sure you're interacting with a real person online? How can you prove to somebody else that you are a real human? That's the question at the heart of today's episode, as we're finally covering WorldCoin. Also known as World Network, WorldCoin is Silicon Valley's boldest attempt yet to create a universal identity system fit for the challenges of a post-AI world. But what on earth does all this mean? That's what Alec and I are here to unpack today. Alec, are you excited for this one? I know I am.
I'm very excited. I'm surprised you recommended this because I was kind of thinking as you were talking, you know, how do you know someone is human? And obviously this makes you quite nervous, Jack, as a robot, that people are going to find out through this project that, you know, one of us isn't actually human. But yeah, you've been wanting to do this for a while. I'm excited. I was reading some of your research before. I didn't realize how interesting, exciting, and slightly out there this project actually is.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because like it's one that I think I and probably a lot of people have dismissed in the past as this quite slightly scary dystopian project that's come out. But actually, there's some really interesting technology at play, and we'll get to kind of the details later. But I'm kind of conflicted about it because, yeah, the technology being used is really, really interesting. And it covers a range of kind of Web3 and crypto stuff to hardware, all this kind of fun things that we talk about. But then there's also the kind of the vision and theory behind it and the potential avenues this could go down that aren't quite as rosy. So yeah, it's a very interesting mix of things. But yeah, I think we should have a go at unpacking it all today.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things around this is it obviously bridges digital identity and crypto, and we'll talk about that in more detail. But the motivating factor and like the man at maybe the middle of this is Sam Altman. And it's kind of like starting to think about what does society look like in 10 to 20 years' time when AI inevitably comes kind of the displacer, the disruptor that we all know it's going to become now? What are some of the impacts that's going to create? And then what are some of the solutions we can have to that? It's really forward thinking. And yeah, it's quite exciting, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get into it. I mean, just to kind of set the scene then, like at a base level, what are we talking about? So WorldCoin is, I think it's a number of things, but fundamentally it's a digital identity protocol, right, as you mentioned. And the goal is providing a universal digital identity for the internet, for in-person interactions as well, but specifically for, you know, what's the best way of doing this in the post-AI age. So the kind of main problem that is espoused here is how do you verify someone online when the quality of deepfakes is so good, right? The way of simulating most human markers online is actually really good now. It's hard to distinguish. So this project aims to provide digital identity without, you know, that won't fall into a trap of deepfakes, basically, and can be completely kind of trusted. And yeah, as you said, it's kind of funny because it's been co-founded by Sam Altman. So he's kind of like owning the supply and the demand here. He's like built the problem with OpenAI and now is supposedly solving the identity solution. But yeah, they raised a ton of money. They raised like, I think around 250 million in total now from the kind of usual suspects like A16Z, Andreessen Horowitz and things like that. So he, Alex Blanier, Max Novenstern, they set this up. You know, we're a bit late to the party. This is around 2 years ago that it's been going now. But yeah, it's interesting that it came from them, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right to highlight the problem that, you know, we're going into a world where agents is the new sexy term, and we can't really tell the difference between a person and, you know, an AI robot or an AI agent online anymore. And it's interesting that we kind of use this term digital identity because, you know, what we're seeing is the really successful digital identity systems always need some kind of anchor to the real world. And like, you know, case in practice here, what we're seeing is they're creating this digital identity system that basically stores information in a digital way, so it's accessible in a digital way. But again, they're strongly linking that digital proof to some physical trait that is very difficult to, you know, fake, basically, and very difficult for a non-human to create. And I think that's really interesting. But the need for this is so obvious. We're seeing spam online. You know, we've talked about review systems. The kind of, there's a pressing need for real digital identity systems, not to remove AI in, you know, the kind of the digital sphere, but just to highlight who is human and know that when you're interacting with someone, you are interacting with a human or interacting with an AI, and that's fine. But you need to be able to tell the difference and distinguish between the two.
Yeah, there are definitely, like, there's so many cases where you want to be able to be sure. You know, when you think of things like online banking, there's potential, I think, in the future for social media to also pop up where you have, you know, you want to know you're talking to a human, all that kind of stuff. I mean, so the problem is actually very concrete and compelling. I think this part of my kind of conflicted view on this whole project is, yeah, I completely buy the problem. I think it's something that needs solving. There's an interesting kind of data point here. There's a Harvard professor, Latanya Sweeney, the kind of company behind WorldCoin. They point to this data point as well, is that they're predicting kind of 90%+ of content online is going to be not generated by humans in the future. So the distinction is going to become even less clear as we go on. So yeah, I think it's a compelling problem. And they are pitching this solution as essentially humanness, and that's a phrase they really like, in the age of AI, right? So that's kind of how they're pitching it. And as of 2025, they've had, you know, kind of mixed level of success. We'll get into kind of some of the controversies around it later. But as it stands, they've had over 5 million people actually onboarded onto the system, right? They've gone and scanned their eyeballs at these orbs, and they've got kind of millions of active users already. So yeah, it's a bit weird that it's already been taken up that much. But yeah, what do you
think?
That
is the first and the last time I want to hear you say eyeballs on this program. I don't know why that word really icks me out. But we're going to get into the how this is actually done and the different components of this system a bit later. I think it's quite interesting that more and more we're seeing, you know, it used to just be digital identity. How do we get digital identity? How do we prove that a human has credentials that can, you know, a human can do these certain things, is, say, of this community or is of this, you know, technical standard, whatever. But now more and more we're seeing kind of these digital identity schemes be pushed to the idea of proof of personhood because of the kind of the mass adoption of AI agents in the world. So I kind of understand why they're kind of pushing the idea of personness and proof of personhood to the kind of the forefront of this project. But it kind of, it's a lot bigger than that. I think it's quite interesting to understand, take a step back, that the internet didn't really ever have like a native concept of identity, which is really interesting. And we've always kind of relied on these kind of modular systems like email logins or platform specific accounts, and obviously they've become more and more centralized and widespread, where you may not be able to tell the difference between the two, because Google's basically accepted everywhere now. But WorldCoin, they're saying they're trying to fix that by tying identity to biology and thus creating like a native concept of identity that could be widely adopted across the world. And we'll go to some of the scope and some of the kind of the applications of this a bit later, because this isn't just an identity system as a kind of an academic like project to discern between humans and non-humans. They've got real applications in mind, and they are tying this to things like crypto to basically give out money across the globe and, you know, serve the unbanked population, which I think is quite a powerful use case, a huge use case, obviously.
Yeah, and if you look at kind of the rhetoric around it from the WorldCoin Foundation and things, they're talking very much about inclusivity and kind of financial inclusion of the world, right? Which is why they actually talk about, they looked at approaching this problem from a few different you know, standpoints, like different ways of verifying identity, and they ultimately settled on having to use biometrics. And it makes sense, because I think biometrics are obviously the kind of gold standard for identification. We're used to using Face ID on our iPhones, right? That's just completely industry standard now, that kind of thing. But the difference here is that they are introducing this kind of protocol aspect. So it's not just a kind of localized individual verification on your iPhone that's run by Apple, etc., using kind of standards for your phone, but it's a protocol that's bigger than that, that establishes a network of humanity, because they're trying to onboard everyone into this single kind of canonical network, saying this is the set of human beings on Earth. And obviously at the minute it's not just five million people on Earth, right? It doesn't represent the totality of humanity right now, but that's the goal, is that once everyone's on, you have a provable set of human beings based on this biometric marker, which is, yeah, very interesting. And again, they talk a lot about, like, you know, trying to fix the fact that lots of people are unbanked, right? Like, they're kind of said, like, 1.4 1.5 billion adults are still unbanked according to World Bank, right? So that's an interesting aspect too.
Yeah, and I think maybe we're starting to get to one of the primary use cases here, is that Sam Altman's kind of obviously his main thing is AI and what the world looks like in 10, 20, 50 years, where AI is kind of like the dominant technology. And he's kind of, and a lot of people are saying this as well, it's not just Sam Altman, but a lot of people are envisioning this world in which AI does a lot of the jobs that we have today. And rather than creating, you know, new jobs, as most technologies have tended to do, there will just be a complete disruption. There will be less jobs for humans. And he's saying when we get to that state, like, it's not a thing that can be solved necessarily politically or shifting the economy. We need complete revamp of how we kind of actually structure the economy. So it'll be things like, he really wants, thinks that we need to implement this universal basic income, right? For people that have been disrupted by AI, AI is now replacing your job. You don't necessarily have to upskill anymore and change things. We just need universal basic income. And it kind of ties into the idea of, like, there will be an abundance of resources, an abundance of, you know, food, houses, energy, absolutely everything in this, you know, utopian world that's going to be created with AI. And he's assuming that UBI, universal basic income, will be needed and will be a standard across the world. And then you start to think, okay, well, how do we give UBI out to individuals? So it's, this is why he's tying this idea of humanity to crypto payments. You've got the efficiency of crypto where you can distribute it to individuals, but also you need to prove that an individual is an individual. And if I, as an AI agent, or even as an individual, can spam up 10,000 accounts, I can really start to manipulate these UBI systems. And so it's kind of like, that's the pain point he seems to be primarily trying to tackle with this.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and actually, when I see them talking about the WorldCoin and World Network now, they don't seem to talk so much about UBI at the minute, but that was very much closely tied in with the inception of the network, and I think it is still philosophically very much tied to it. But yeah, it's about, you know, how, when we have this final, what is it, not late stage capitalism, post late stage capitalism, whatever that happens, whatever that becomes, when, if we are going to be receiving these universal basic income UBI payments, then what's the most efficient way to distribute that in a fair way? And the other aspect is also, in that kind of post capitalism world, the governance of the system as well, like who should control and own this. They're trying to set this up so this will be, in theory, acting like a public good right in the future. But yeah, maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves with the future stuff. Should we try and tackle exactly how it works, because I'm conscious at the minute it's still a little bit abstract.
Yeah, I think it'd be good. Like, you definitely know more about this. Maybe you can define the individual components that fit into this.
Yeah. So basically, I see it as a two or three different things. So the first one being the identity system that we said at the start, at its core, WorldCoin is built around an identity system, which they call World ID. Now, the idea here is that, you know, we talk about digital identity plenty of times on the podcast. There are hundreds of different digital identity systems that exist already, blockchain and non-blockchain. And this is one of the blockchain flavor ones, and it's based on a bunch of open protocols for issuing identities. It uses zero knowledge proofs, like we've talked about a lot. So you can essentially present credentials and prove that you're part of this this human set that's been defined by WorldCoin. So basically getting digital credentials that are privacy preserving with zero knowledge proof. So that's the identity system, and we can go into more details. The second component is the orbs that we already alluded to themselves. This is where we go from the digital to the physical digital hardware part of the story. So these orbs, and again, this is like the most, I guess, well-known part of the project. These are the things that actually do the scanning of the eyeballs. Sorry, I like to say the word again, but this is these are the things that actually scan your eyeballs and issue or basically verify uniqueness. That's what, in my research, I was actually distilling it down. It's all about uniqueness, these orbs, because they're basically allowing you to issue one identity per pair of eyeballs that have been scanned, right? So again, to use the word too many times, but that's at the core of how it works. And then finally, so once you've scanned at one of these orbs, you get one of those digital identities issued in a private manner on a blockchain or on Ethereum. And the last stage of that is then the app itself. So you have like a digital wallet app, again, very similar to what we've discussed in the past with digital identity systems that allow you to manage the credentials, to add and connect other forms of identity to your World ID. And then on top of all that, if that wasn't enough crypto jargon, they also have, of course, there's a token, right? Which is all part of how when we talk about UBI, that might be the currency that it's issued in the future in that, you know, world that they're envisaging, but it's also primarily used right now as like the incentive and feedback mechanism to incentivize people to go and get scanned by the orbs, and also to incentivize people to work as they call them operators, to go and take these orbs out into the public and scan people. So it's kind of the incentive piece behind that.
Man, this just sounds so weird and dystopian. Like, I don't know how like, even just as I'm looking at the pictures of these orbs right now, and it looks culty as hell. Like, it's really weird. I think, like, they are trying to, I think they've maybe gone for that angle as well. Like, this is so futuristic, and they've kind of set their ambition, obviously, 20, 30, 50 years in the future, that I imagine they are gearing up in every way to kind of think about, like, how do we make this as futuristic as possible? Maybe, like, just to get the pioneers who are kind of into that stuff on board now, and eventually it'll be normal in 30 years' time. But yeah, I think you've broken it down in quite a clear way. You have these giant eyeball type things, and you got me saying it, I hate it. They're like bowling ball size cylinders, yeah, right? And they, you have an individual that has them for whatever reason, because they're one of these creepy sci-fi people, and they will take scans of people's eyes. Can we just say eyes? Like, let's say eyes. Eyes is easier than eyeballs. And they, like you say, obviously eyes have a very distinct pattern. So that uniqueness, then using the scanner, Cora is hashed, and like you create kind of a unique representation of that that doesn't reveal. Has no privacy preservation. Like, you can't. Sorry, there is privacy preservation involved, where you can't then work out what the eye is based on that hash currently. Obviously, maybe in the future that might change, and that keeps it anonymous as well. So I can use it. I can link my distinct eye to that if I need to, but I have a degree of anonymity if I want to. So someone can't work out my eyeball pattern based on the hash on chain. I've seen like some criticisms around these giant orb things, like, they're not open source, the firmware hasn't been audited, they're saying that, it's all privacy preserving and we're not storing your eyes in the orb or something like this. But I don't think anyone's actually third party come along and said, yeah, that's true. Imagine Sam Altman's got like a giant catalog somewhere of everyone's eyes and just stares at them in a room or something like this. But it's TBD.
Yeah, it's a real, it feels like a gray area. And it's not something I've personally verified, because it's way beyond my technical expertise, but they did take a few steps originally when this all came out to kind of open source aspects of it, and like I think they've open sourced some of the designs and plans for the hardware itself, so you could in theory kind of build them elsewhere, right? Which is, again, not sure if that's a good thing as well. I don't know if I'd rather trust the WorldCoin Foundation to build these themselves, or if I if we're going to start letting anyone build them, then you're going to have this issue at the point of the orb itself, right? It's like, well, how do I know the person presenting me with this orb is actually a good faith, honest actor, and it's not someone else trying to spoof it? And I think there's already been some kind of worries about that. But yeah, just to kind of double click on the identity piece from a tech perspective, there is actually a really interesting thing going on here whereby the actual digital identity itself, so when we talk about like DIDs, the actual kind of identification information, the kind of unique identifier for you as a human, as part of this network, that's something that actually is not generated by these orbs themselves. So the kind of flow is, you'll go up to go and get scanned, but before that you'll download one of these apps like the World app, and on device is where the keys actually get generated, right? So you're like, your public key that's going to be tied to your identity is generated on your phone, let's say, on this app. Then when you go to get your iris scanned at one of these orbs, the purpose of the orb is literally just to make sure that no one else has scanned their iris against this before. So it'll check all these hash codes, they call them, right, that unique identification that represents this scan of the iris, and it will basically say, well, has this pair of eyes been scanned before? If no, then okay, that's fine, I will issue this identity that is tied to the credential on your phone. So they are actually firewalled, this thing that's being scanned on the device with your actual app. But yeah, and they supposedly comes with a guarantee that nothing is also retained on the devices. So the scans themselves are supposedly deleted, the scans of your iris. But yeah, there have been people worrying about it nonetheless, and there have been some kind of conflicting reports about that too.
Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability, and VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions, like recycling, at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at vbetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out vbetterdao.com to find out more. And now, back to the show.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So like the eye scan with the orb is just for setup, and it's just to prove uniqueness initially, exactly, and prove humanity initially. I thought it was because, like, obviously there's two angles to proof here. One is like the proving of the credential. And then, like, say in this instance, it would be the orb saying this is a person. And then the other one is the proving to a verifier that this credential corresponds to me specifically. So I thought that, you know, once I have the credential on my phone that I am a human or whatever, I then go to the supermarket, say, look, I'm a human. Let me buy this human grapes or something like this.
Human grapes.
Yeah, exactly. Human grapes. And they're like, put them in robot prison ASAP. And then I thought that you'd have to somehow correspond that proof to you again, and you do another eye scan. But you're saying it's just for the initial setup, yeah, and everything after that is like what, linked to my fingerprint or something like this?
Yeah, it's actually, so yeah, you're right to point out like the onboarding phase and how you get the identity is a slightly different to how you verify, but the orbs are just be, because I had the same assumption. I was like, am I gonna have to scan my eyes every time I you know make a purchase, right? Am I gonna have to have one in my house to log on to Google, that kind of thing? But no, it's literally for that uniqueness point. I believe the kind of unique representation that gets generated of the iris stays, but all of the rest of it, like you basically keep the end piece as a unique identifier to say, okay, this is some eyeballs that correspond to this hash have been scanned and they're in the set. And that all kind of goes, I believe, kind of gets managed on the blockchain as well in a smart contract. And then, yeah, once you're onboarded, it's the public key that is the important thing for the identity. But then when you go to the verification side and say, I want to authenticate with a website to prove I'm a human. I think Reddit actually was one of the companies supporting this I saw potentially. But yeah, if you want to authenticate once then using your world ID, what's actually happening is they've gone, because they are very, very, you know, privacy conscious, or they at least say they are. And the protocols themselves are all open source for how this happens. It's quite interesting. But essentially, you're then wrapping your credential, your public key, in additional zero knowledge proofs. So the analogy is you're basically having a single use disposable identity every time you authenticate, but it's all tied back to a kind of main proof. And the main proof is what I was alluding to earlier, is that when we talk about zero knowledge proofs, again, just to recap, it's like saying I have a claim about something and I can prove it to you without revealing anything about the claim. The only thing that gets effectively revealed in this is the claim that I am a part of the set of humans in the system. That's it. It's like a set membership thing. So all I'm proving is my public key is part of the global set of people who have been scanned. And then that gets wrapped up in a zero knowledge proof each and every time you get used. And they did that intentionally so that you can't, you know, correlate. If you log into this website and then this website, people can't see it's the same person logging in, that kind of stuff. So it's meant to kind of firewall privacy at that level too.
I'm just imagining a futuristic scenario, you know, in this AI Terminator dystopian world where they're trying to get these human world coin proofs. And obviously the eyeball scans are the really difficult thing to basically create. But all of a sudden, you know, Jack Davis has an eyeball scan and they can't recreate that. But Jack Davis died 100 years ago and they're pretending he's still alive and they can quite easily get into his system. And, you know, he's only got, password 123 star password to prove that it's his credential or something like this. And then they can get around it. Maybe I'm being a bit of a pessimist here, but like I thought that was the secure line that would be used to link credentials to you every single time. But obviously that's not practical.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting point, right? Because I think, you know, from a marketing perspective, the orb, this big chrome bowling ball that you go and get scanned at, that's the thing that is like, that's what people have a perception of. They think, oh, WorldCoin, they think of that orb. But actually, that's not necessarily the main point of security for the whole system. And actually, the weak points are going to be everywhere else. They're going to be the people who are operating them, these operators who, you know, are standing in the street with these orbs and getting people to scan. They're going to be
like
on
clothed hoods in like dark capes and stuff.
Yeah, sacrificing lambs and stuff in front of them. And it's going to be on the devices themselves, the apps that are using it, you know, all that kind of stuff. The way you are compromising the system will probably be most likely the way you normally are. It's like someone has got your phone and is forcing you to do something on it, right? It's like It's like any technology. It's not going to solve all those problems. So that's why I highlighted the uniqueness part. I think that's like the bit they're solving for. And again, they chose that because there's a level of universality to it, because it should work everywhere. And they are, you know, iris scans are highly, highly unique, even though some people are now speculating that you could manufacture them with the tools today, and you could create effectively synthetic irises to, you know, create multiple personalities, right? So that's one thing. And then all you'd have to do is get a sympathetic operator to scan you in four or five times. So that's another issue. But it's definitely like, there's definitely problems that people have pointed out and are a little bit worried about. But yeah, nothing's ever foolproof, right?
This is going to get weirder and weirder, isn't it? Like, it's always like technology's catching up with the proofs, right? So it's like eyeballs were the thing that couldn't be, you know, faked, and then we're saying we can, and then eventually it's going to be like, okay, I need to take your blood, and that's going to be the thing that goes on chain. It's going to get more and more pervasive every time. I think that one element that I want to talk about is the crypto aspect as well, because it's not immediately obvious like what role it plays there. I see that you have this wallet, obviously, where you can store your credentials, which makes sense, but then they have their own crypto coin, what's it called, World, WLD, and you can, they're giving lots of airdrops to users initially, and you can convert it to local fiat and, you know, connect to dApps and all this kind of stuff. Like, it wasn't immediately obvious what the crypto use case was there, if it was just another project that probably needs to make money, and crypto is the way to make a big number and, you know, get lots of investment and whatnot.
Yeah. So again, like, it's easy to be cynical here, and I will be, but I think it's like there are two main purposes from what I can see. One is ownership of the network itself, or ownership in the future governance. And I will, you know, put emphasis on future, because right now it is all being operated by the WorldCoin Foundation. And even when you think about things like the blockchain stuff, right? How does this scale? Like, blockchains aren't handling that many transactions per second right now. And they are also introducing kind of central points of failure or central points of trust in how you use the blockchain in this, right? Like, there are elements of that too. But it's about this future vision where the WorldCoin Foundation, which apparently also is not owned by the same, you know, Sam Altman is like separated from that as well. But they're thinking about this future where essentially it's this public good, and decisions in governance are made by holders of the coin, right? Which, again, I can just imagine has a whole bunch of other issues. Like, how are we going to globally govern this identity system? Like, it sounds kind of impossible to me. But that's one function of it. The second and more cynical one is, obviously, it's an incentive to sign up. So I think, you know, in London, when this was, I think in 2023 or 2024, when people were standing around with these orbs, they were offering something like 25 world coins or WLDs for getting scanned, right? Which is, I think, is worth something like $25 at the minute. So it's clearly just like any crypto scheme, right? It's an incentive to get onboarded. There are airdrops, that kind of stuff. I also thought it was being used to incentivize the operators, the people holding the orbs for people, but I actually saw a report that they're being paid in Tether instead, so I'm not entirely sure about that anymore. But yeah, it's crypto doing crypto stuff, basically.
Yeah, I saw lots of, some of the controversies that we talked about earlier were related to a lot of these. Obviously, like, they're kind of pitching this towards the egalitarian angle of, there's 1.4 billion unbanked, we've got to help these people, you know, give them universal income and all this kind of stuff. So these kind of, the projects have done very well in places like Kenya, Argentina, Indonesia. And again, like, one of the controversies is they're offering $20, which is, you know, quite a large sum of money relative out there, but many of the people that would go into these, you know, hooded figures with these giant silver eyeballs didn't know that what they were doing or signing up to. They didn't know it was an iris scan, they didn't know how it would be used. I saw someone use the term bio data colonialism, which is quite powerful, and they've obviously come under like a lot of stick for targeting this, so maybe uneducated or not giving them the information they need to actually make the decisions, and obviously just waving some money around and saying, you know, don't worry too much.
Yeah, it's notable that the world coin itself, the token, is not currently available in the US, right? So because of all the scrutiny around this and the potential issues around data, While, you know, not to say there is or isn't, but like that people are worried about it and people are uncertain. And they've clearly made inroads in other countries where things might be more lax from a regulatory perspective, or they think, you know, frankly, they can get away with, you know, what is it? Ask for forgiveness and not permission, basically, right? So they're going out there and, you know, in many cases, they are now running into trouble. Like I think in Portugal last year, they had to kind of temporarily halt everything because of an issue around being able to withdraw consent. They're like, well, how, once it's in this big global identity system on the blockchain, how do you withdraw your consent to be part of the system? It doesn't seem like that's been baked in very much. And there's been various suspensions in various countries. There's been, I think, one in Indonesia around questions over the operators and how they were working. You know, so maybe like there were some dodgy dealings going on basically with these people on the ground. There have been reports of black markets popping up. I think it was in China there was a report from, I think,
get your eyeballs here, real humans.
Well, yeah, there was a black market for the data, and I don't know if it was data that, you know, in theory they're not stored on the orbs, right? But back to that question of the hardware, how difficult is it to create or take one of these orbs and modify it slightly to keep the data, right? That kind of stuff is all going to be in question. So yeah, there's been a lot of controversy around this beyond just the bad taste for some of the concept as well.
And we talked about the Snowden kind of leak and scandal and all this kind of stuff. Like if you get into someone's supply chain for whatever reason and you just plant a little chip in there that's recording everything and offloading it, like how hard is it really to do this? Especially when you think this is going to be deployed worldwide and they want to support 8 billion people. Like obviously they're going to need hundreds of thousands of orbs. There's no way they can properly vet and verify. And even if, you know, a government tells them to do that, they're going to have to comply. So yeah, do you trust it? You know, don't trust verify, that kind of thing. But it's hard to verify these closed systems and like these little black boxes. Well, I guess we call them silver cylinders now, is the equivalent of a black box where you don't really know what's going on in there. Yeah, there's so many things that I want to like double click on. Like whenever we talk about putting data on chain, European GDPR always comes up, right? The right to deletion is paramount in all things internet right now. And that's just not possible with blockchain. Like a lot of people argue that, okay, that you're not putting real data on there. Like you put in hashes of data, which isn't the data, but we don't really know if there will be a time in the future at which point that data, which is, you know, immutable, always there, can be reverse engineered back to the original data. So there's always kind of been a bit of a gray zone of, is hash data, like, should it be GDPR compliant if it's on a blockchain? And I think there's a lot of reluctance from governments to go down that route because of that GDPR compliance, specifically in Europe, I guess, more than anything. I think the big thing is, like you said, if they claim to be a decentralized network, and you know technically they are, but like you say, these orbs, the models, the infrastructure, they're all managed by this Tools for Humanity. So it right now, like technically you might look at that, but when everything's, you know, all the power really lies in Tools for Humanity and they're pulling all the strings and paying all the people, like there really is a single point of failure. And how much do you want to buy into that system right now?
Yeah, and I think that even, you know, coming back to the like scalability question as well, I mean, there's like tons of scalability questions here in general. Like, how do you scale this to getting everyone onboarded? Who's paying for that, right? Like, are we going to do these airdrops of WorldCoin forever to everyone? How's that going to work? Like, that's going to be, you know, extra trillions of dollars to do that. But also from just purely on the, you know, from we're a techie blockchain podcast as well. So I just think of, you know, you're relying on these, they call them like centralized sequences and batches to do this. They've also come out with like a, so originally all of this was happening on Ethereum. So the identities themselves, that's where they're making commitments like hashed or zero knowledge proof commitments to these identities on the blockchain, but Ethereum can only handle so much. So they actually developed a, I think it's called World Network or something, as a layer two. So now they have a layer two that's built in the same way as things like Base or Optimism using that stack. But for that, they still have this centralized model, right, where they have a WorldCoin Foundation essentially entity in the mix, right? So you have to ask questions like, what if they run out of money? What if they just stop operating these things, right? The system can die just because of apathy in the end, right? They've been funded, they've got 250 million funds to play with, that will run out up one day, right? And will they keep it going? So it's like, once you've onboarded hundreds of millions of people, is it then at risk? And that's where I think also the token probably comes into it. Maybe there's a bet on the token value going up to sustain these operations, that kind of stuff. But it's a bit of a guessing game, I think, as well.
I get why we're kind of in this multi-coin world where it's like
everyone thinks they can make a quick buck by spinning out their own coin and trying to, like, you know, inflate the value. And if they're an initial investor, they make loads of money and lots of leverage and 100x and all this kind of stuff. But increasingly, you are reliant on promises and the promise that the number will go up. And like a lot of these systems don't necessarily have inherent kind of confirmed value being given to users. And like you say, if one party disappears that's funding everything in Tether, for example, mm-hmm. like how does the system self-maintain? It doesn't a lot of the time. Whereas like things like Bitcoin and even Ethereum now and like other major chains, they've been going on for so long now that the system is kind of like self-fulfilling in that it does self-reward, and it's unlikely that that's going to disappear overnight. Like a lot of things of these things aren't battle tested. And like Bitcoin was fine. It wasn't being battle, or it wasn't battle tested for the first 3 years, but there wasn't enough people or money in the system for it to matter. But now, whatever it is, 20 years later, like, well, less than that, but you know, it's well battle tested and people can buy into that system and trust in that system. It's probably why there's been so much reluctance to invest in, you know, other coins that aren't Bitcoin necessarily. I think with this whole project, I get the problem. I really do understand the problem. I think even to look at like really futuristic use cases like the UBI stuff, looking at the underbanked population, there's a lot of immediate kind of near-term problems that this could solve as well, like replacing recaptures and captures, like as they, you know, these AI systems are getting smarter, those things are becoming less relevant and, you know, less useful. We obviously in DAO systems, in a lot of crypto projects, we have a lot of unknown and fake users, Sybil use attacks and all this kind of stuff. And obviously that all relates to airdrops where you want value to be going to individuals rather than a few manipulative malicious parties. So I think there's a lot of milestones they can tick off in the meantime. But is this the right way to do it? It seems like such a kind of like finger in the air, futuristic, overspecced solution to a real problem. And I don't know if I buy into it, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm in a similar place. Like beyond finding the tech very interesting, and they are using cutting edge stuff to do all this. It does feel like they are I think they're solving the problem, in a sense, right? They're solving the problem of proof of personhood in the digital age. The problem is that it introduces a bunch of other issues, right? And that's really where I would take issue with it personally. Is like, are we just hitting the limits of what's possible when you're trying to prove humanity, but you're putting a digital interface in between things, right? Like maybe there's a fundamental law here where as soon as you put a screen or the computer between human beings, then you can only do so much, and you can solve it if you have a centralized party and you accept all these security issues, or you accept potential privacy issues, all that kind of stuff. And again, they say it's very private, and the technology would say that too, but there's always going to be issues. There's always going to be malicious humans involved that are going to game the system as well. So yeah, that side of it, just from a purely technical perspective, I feel like this is not a solution that is going to be appealing to everyone, right? Like the reception to it was very poor from most people. People don't want to go and get scanned by these orbs. They think, you know, your average person on the street is going to see this, I think, quite clearly as, you know, some weird dystopian thing, as you said, and I don't want to be involved with that, right? Like to only have 5 million users with the kind of network effects they have, and you see how fast ChatGPT grew by comparison, it's clearly not as compelling. And then you have the whole, like you mentioned, the feeling that there's some taking advantage of different cultures involved here, right? Like all the adoption has happened in certain places. It's been a lot slower in the West, in the US, in Europe, right? And you know, partly for regulation, partly because maybe they haven't been targeted as much as well. So yeah, it's one that, despite all the technological interest of this, it does feel a little bit unnerving to me, definitely.
Yeah, I think I kind of like see this as, I imagine, because this is like a very Web3 blockchain crypto savvy project, right? And that's probably what they're pitching towards initially, as a lot of these projects tend to do. And I think I can imagine a lot of resistance from that community, purely because it offers quite a centralized Web2 style model. And yeah, we've got all the ZKP and the blockchain token stuff, whatever. But at the end of the day, you are still verified by a centralized service, the orb, whatever you want to call it. And you know, when you've got so many projects that are trying to solve this in maybe much more open, trusted or trustless ways, using Web3 like proof of humanity, doing reputation based Gitcoin passport, doing signal based scoring, where it's much more about, you know, you can verify these things in multiple ways, from say a collection of reputation from 1,000 people, and then someone offers you this giant orb solution where it's like Worldcoin gives you the stamp of approval on your eyeball to say you are a person. I can see why there's reluctance in the crypto Web3 community to adopt this as well. And I do think there always will have to be a place for both. There will always have to be the big centralized institutions that have a big fat weighting and say, Jack is Jack, Alec is Alec, give me your eyeball and here's your big score. But there will also always be that there will need to be more community-based voting on, okay, this is my history. This is my transaction history. These are the social connections I have. These are the things I do on a day-to-day basis. And I imagine like the future paradigm that is needed to do this kind of stuff and solve these kind of huge problems is a combination of both.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because we should also, you know, just very briefly touch on some of the competing things out there, right? They're not the only game in town when it comes to digital identity and having these big networks of them. And there are lots of other companies. You've got Proof of Humanity. You've got what's now the Holonym Foundation. They acquired Gitcoin Passport, which is another one of these big projects. And those are, they're taking some of the initial thinking, I think, that WorldCoin had around like peer validation, attestation from your peer group, like we've talked about in digital identity, right? Like getting your identity being the sum of what your community says about you almost. They're taking that approach, which is much more kind of Web3 native and doesn't put these big centralized parties in the way or this weird orb scanning biometric system in there as well, right? It's purely cryptographic, purely digital, which I think, yeah, to your point, a lot of the people in the crypto world would argue private money has been solved already, and that what WorldCoin and World Network are doing here is they're conflating a global currency, a global private currency, with this data, this AI deepfake problem, right? Because they're trying to do something that solves everything at once. People will probably argue that Bitcoin or X whatever blockchain solves the money part of it, and maybe I'll just put up with the fact that I know the internet's full of deepfakes and stuff anyway, right? Like maybe that's an acceptable thing for them.
I think that's maybe the pitfall of this, or maybe will be the downfall of this, is that they're maybe trying to do too much. And I get why they've had to do that, why they've gone beyond just the like identity system and to the money system as well. And I get that. A lot of it's funding, a lot of it's so they don't have to like, you know, buy lots of Bitcoin, buy lots of Ethereum to fund this and run this and all that kind of stuff. And maybe they want to have a degree of centralization when they're testing things out initially to, you know, have higher transactions, not have to, you know, worry about Ethereum's throughput and all this kind of stuff. But again, like you say, other projects have already solved for that element. So I think maybe they've done too much and they should have just concentrated on the digital identity system with the orbs, and maybe it would have been easier then. But let's see, like, you know, who knows? This might be the login with Google of Web3 in 20 years and we'll look back and be like, damn, I wish I'd scanned my eyeball earlier and got $20 that's now 100 million or something like this.
Yeah, or we'll all be kind of part of this cybernet system and we will have no choice anymore. But yeah, it's at least we've got a better understanding now, I think, of how it works. And I'm glad we covered it, even though we're about 2 years late. But yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on for the future. And yeah, I guess that's a good place to end things. And if you've been listening the whole way through, thank you for listening. And you can join us next time to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.